From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Later on in the show, a look at what could be the future of nuclear power. But first, it was 5 years ago this summer, the East Coast got an unexpected jolt.
This is a CBS News special report. I'm Scott Pelley, reporting from CBS News headquarters in New York. We are interrupting the programming this afternoon because of a rather unusual event. There has been an earthquake along the eastern coast of the United States.
That magnitude 5.8 earthquake in Virginia was felt as far away as Boston and caused damage in Washington, D.C. All earthquakes, including this one, are products of the dynamic planet we live on. They typically occur as massive slabs of the Earth's crust bump against, over, and past one another. But the East Coast is nowhere near a plate boundary. So what caused the 2011 Virginia earthquake and many others that have been recorded in Appalachia? A seismologist at the University of North Carolina says he might know. A team led by Dr. Burke Birial examined the patterns of seismic waves passing through and under the North American continent. They discovered it appears parts of the crust under our feet are slowly falling away and sinking deeper into the Earth. It's not like you can drill a hole down through the Earth's crust and then put your eye up to the hole and look down there and see what's going on. You used seismic waves in kind of an indirect way to study what's going on in areas that no humans can see. How did that work?
We deployed some earthquake recording instruments out in the field, seismometers.
Seismometers, right.
Yeah. So we basically record distant earthquakes, and we specifically concentrate on when the waves from those earthquakes arrive at our stations. And that tells us about how fast they travel in the Earth.
This sounds to me, Dr. Birial, a little bit like the situation that many of us encounter. If you're trying to hang like a heavy picture, a heavy frame up in your home, and you want to find a stud within your wall, you listen and you tap along the wall until you hear a change in the sound. And that change in the sound tells you whether it's hollow drywall or a solid stud. It sounds like that's kind of what you're doing here. You're listening for these different seismic waves, different velocities, that change in tone that tells you what's going on behind the crust, right?
Yeah. The principle is very similar. So we are sort of doing a remote sensing of what's underneath the Earth.
When we talk about pieces of the Earth's crust falling and falling deeper into the planet, I don't want anybody to think we're talking about the apocalypse here. This is not a situation like a decaying old ceiling and chunks of plaster falling into empty space in a room. So what really is happening here? You're talking about pieces of the plates kind of slowly detaching and then sinking down into different layers. So what really is going on there?
Like you said, this process is not like plaster of a ceiling falling down. It's not a rapid process like that. This takes place over tens of millions of years, actually. So it is almost like motion of the plates on the surface of the Earth or formation of mountains.
Yeah, it's happening on a time scale for which a human lifetime is just incomparable.
Exactly.
Your results should be, if they're valid, be able to be observed or tested in other parts of the world and get basically the same results. So are there other areas of the tectonic plates around the Earth that you're looking at where this same process might be happening and other scientists could investigate to see if that is the case?
Oh, yeah. To give an example from North American plate, this has been observed beneath Nevada and some parts of California.
Dr. Burke Birial is a seismologist at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. This has been a fascinating conversation, Dr. Birial. Thanks for joining us on The Method.
Thank you for having me.
You may have heard talk about the TVA's desire to build a series of small nuclear reactors on the shore of the Clinch River near Oak Ridge. They're called Small Modular Reactors, or SMRs. Despite concerns that a standard design for SMRs doesn't exist in the U.S. yet, the TVA is moving forward with its plans. Before joining TVA's public relations team, Jim Hobson was an electrical engineer who specialized in nuclear energy. Matt Schaefer-Powell recently asked him to describe how SMRs work.
Tell me how small modular reactors are different from the traditional nuclear power facilities that we're used to, like maybe at Watts Bar.
Well, in terms of operation, they're actually very similar. Most of the small modular reactor designs that are currently being proposed are what are called pressurized water reactors. That essentially means that the water that's actually cooling the fuel inside the reactor is completely separate from the water that's used to produce steam to produce power. In Watts Bar and Sequoia, it's the same type of mechanism that is used, but the supporting structures are much more condensed in a small modular reactor, where a Watts Bar or a Sequoia, a traditional pressurized water reactor, may take 10 years or more to build, and each one has to be built in its location. Small modular reactors are designed to put all of the reactor and power generation points, with the exception of the turbine, into one small unit that could literally be built in a factory and moved to a location for installation on the back of a truck.
So when we talk about small, what does small mean? If I'm standing on the bank of the river, what am I seeing?
Well, you won't be seeing much because small modular reactors are also designed to be installed underground. So what you would be seeing would be looking like an industrial building. The reactors themselves would be located underground. The size of the reactors depends upon the design, but most of the reactor designs are less than 30 feet across and maybe 100 feet long, and that's the entire thing.
When you have centralized nuclear power production, you kind of have the opportunity to overwhelm the site with security measures. It seems to me like that could be missing when you have smaller facilities and they're scattered around the country.
Actually, most small modular reactor concepts are not really designed to be single units. They're designed to be installed in multiples at any given place. So the security infrastructure for one could easily incorporate multiple units on the same physical site. You simply don't have to put all of your eggs in the nuclear basket all at once. You can phase it in over time as you need it.
How long before we see these go online?
Right now, the Tennessee Valley Authority is looking at the potential of siting a small modular reactor at its Clinch River site near Knoxville, Tennessee, with the possibility of having that unit online sometime in the mid-2020s to late 2020s timeframe. That's going to allow us to do two things. It will allow us to help prove in the concept of small modular reactors, since they have not been commercially deployed in the United States to date. Plus, it will allow us to investigate their potential uses off of the main grid to serve as a supplemental power source, if you will, for large federal installations like the Oak Ridge National Lab.
That's it for this edition of The Method. Subscribe to our podcast feed through iTunes. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.